Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA licensed football coach, coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and today I've got a very special guest with me. My guest today is Nathir Al-Khatib. How are you, Nathir? You cool?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. And thank you for having me here today.
Good stuff. And I'm glad you can be with us. And I'm sure we're going to go through some fantastic parts of your journey. Nathir, just for those that maybe aren't too familiar with who you are and what you do currently, would you mind just sharing a bit around what that is?
At the moment, with B's current situation, we are off furloughs as our coaches, as you know, but I've been working with Peterborough as a YDP coach. I am involved as a board director at Cambridgeshire FA. I chair the inclusion, so I try to promote diversity and inclusion in the county. Also, my other background, which is usually a lot of people, they don't know about that, is I am an IT officer at King's College, University of Cambridge. I'm a family man. I've got two kids. So, and I'm proud of them.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. I'm not going to waste any time. You know, I'm sure we're going to touch on many parts of your journey throughout this conversation, but I just want to kind of take you right back to the start of it. Where was it that the origins of your football coaching journey started? And, you know, what was it about coaching in particular that caught your eye and, you know, you decided for you that this was the journey I wanted to go down? I think as with many of us, most of us in it, at least, we have a passion for the game and that's part of the reason why we do it. But for many of us, we realize we're never going to quite make it as players. What was your journey like in that start for you?
I think my journey started quite simple. When I was 6-7 years old, we're lucky to have a big garden, which is, let's say, a quarter of a pitch on 11-11 side. So you could see that I've got potential to play football in that garden. And it's interesting at that time. So we're talking about 36, 37 years ago, where I used to call a couple of friends in our neighbours and we play 2v2 all the time. Then we decided to move to another house, which is another coincidence that the pitch was in the front of my house door. So I couldn't resist that. And the size was, can calibrate 5v5, 6v6. And if you want to be a little bit more, 7v7. And in Iraq, whereas in Baghdad, the educational system was you study for about 6-7 months and then you break off for 3 months in the summer. So I've got 3 months. So what I used to do is play every single day football. If I have a 90 days of football, 90 days of holiday, probably 70 days of them is just purely playing football. So I have developed, without any coaching at all, an excellent technical skills in terms of dribbling, passing, you know, even use the wall and in the street, because they're all small, tight areas. And you could play these things. And then I progressed through the school team, then the secondary team, and I become the top scorer. And I remember I took my class team, my classmate. We are about 20 people, 20 players, younger players, 13, 14, to go on trialist in a club in Baghdad, which is at that time they are a Premier League club. And what interesting is, I'm the only one being accepted. So I signed with them and I joined till I become a first team player. Obviously, there's a lot of complication in Iraq, where there's a lot of sanction, war at that time, and probably a little bit of family focusing on education. So they push education, football is not going to help you. But this was my passion, so I carried on with this. However, the journey finished when the war started in 2003, where I had to leave Iraq. Then I moved to Dubai. Obviously, there is a couple of incidents that let me leave Iraq. Number one is because of what's happening. The second one, I've been shot by American Army in my arm. Actually, it's here. There's a still sign here. And then I went to Dubai, really start losing a little bit interest. I play a futsal because I was good at small-sided games. So I played futsal and I was coping with that for 2 years. And then I decided to move to England. I didn't really think about playing football that much. And the reason is I lost completely interest in football. For main reason, my dad was killed in bomb attack, which is killed all the passion. And after that, I decided to focus on my education, which because I managed to get a master degree in wireless communication from London. And then I got a son and he started kicking the ball. And when he becomes 6-7 years old, I thought I'm going to try to find some way he could participate in a club or maybe school, soccer school. So I started taking him to Cambridge United Soccer School, Arsenal Soccer School. And I still remember I start observing the coaches for a year. And one night, thought, I could do better than this. I don't know why I said it. You know, I still remember how I'm what we call self-talk. And then I decided to go and ask the coach, hello, how can I become a coach like you? And he said, you need to do this. So I contacted Cambridgeshire FA and I applied for level one.
Yeah. So just on that, you know, what was it about that initial stage there where you felt, I can do better than this? What was it that stood out for you initially? Clearly at that point, you maybe weren't overly impressed with what was going on.
At that time, I thought, because I've been observing the coaching behavior for a long time, for that's what I said, 1 year. And I thought maybe if they give some attention to my son more, I thought like they have favoritism for one or two players. They're not inclusion. Either you paid money for it, it's not like an academy, but I didn't feel like my son could be given the best experience they could have. So I thought, okay, they can't do it. I'm going to take that lead. I'm going to educate myself as, you know, to become a coach so I could help my son enjoying his football. And that's the start.
And I think you make a great observation there, in that something that really kind of stood out for me there was that the coaches kind of favored in some ways maybe the players that were actually better than the others. And it happens quite a lot. So I guess, you know, in terms of that, it's probably good that you kind of noticed that early on, that maybe your son probably wasn't going to get as much support as he probably could have or maybe deserved at that time. So, you know, you've contacted Cambridgeshire FA, you did your level one. What was that like, and how, you know, where did the journey go from next?
It was uninteresting. I think when I start listening to the tutor at that time, and I think I become, yeah, I think I could do more and more. So when I start doing it, and I remember he came to me on a practice design, he said, how did you know all this? Because the way I progressed it at that time, I said to him, because I played the game, I played this level. And he said, that's a good one. So I noticed I've got some skills that I could contribute to coaching, which is, I could bring some of the, what we call it, engineering skills to the coaching skills, to the coaching profession. And then basically after I finished level one, I thought, okay, what I'm going to coach. So I start contacting club. I struggled, I'm not going to lie to you, even in under six or under seven, to find a club to accommodate me with their coaching staff. Is however, grassroots. And at that time, I contacted Cambridge Sheriff. I said, I've got level one. I want to just have experience. I want to have a go at it. I want to try. Mm-hmm. And they gave me about 5-6 clubs. I start contacting these clubs. And one of them, which is Fulbourne FC grassroots team, they said, we have a place for you. And I remember the coach, he used to give me 25 minutes from his coaching session, which was a very good experience. Mm-hmm. And the reason I wanted to get involved in that is because I come from a different culture. So I decided to, okay, if I want to learn about the English culture in depth, I need to start from the grassroots team. And I start integrate myself, learning the language, the phrases they use, so I become better coach in terms of communication. And after that, Tom came to me, I think Tom, came Tom as the head coach. He said, would you like to coach in like a whole session? I said, yes. He said, I've got a team for you. And since then I joined another grassroots team. The manager I worked with, he was phenomenal. He opened the door for me. And he let me do the coaching bit, and I was in love with it. And I could see myself, I want to do level one now, and I want to do level two, level two, level three. And I start doing that slowly, slowly. So I stayed 2 years, and it was a good start as a coach.
No, fantastic. And just to kind of paint a bigger picture, then what kind of time were we in here? Is this what... mid-2000s, early 2000s?
In England?
In terms of your journey, level one, what year were we in
there? No, my journey started in 2005.
Okay, so 2005, you've done your level one, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, right. So what was that like? Obviously, moving from level one to level two, what was the kind of time frame in between that?
It didn't take that long. I think about 6 months.
Okay, right. Yeah, it's quite similar to me in some ways. You know, I found that I was hooked from the moment I did my level one, started coaching, and similar to you. I mean, I guess I was fortunate in some ways that I was able to go into an environment straight away and be the lead coach for the group. So I was kind of immersed in it a bit more. From that level two, then, where did the journey go from then? Because obviously, more recently, you know, you touched at the top of the conversation, you're working in academy football now. Where did you go from being a level two coach to now working in an academy? And various different experiences between that.
I think what I call it struggle is I wanted to get involved in the professional game, and I wanted to learn more. I wanted to find more. I wanted to become better and better. And I think this is because of my human nature as Nathan is I'm always driven. I want to push. I want to learn. I'm a quick learner. I learn quickly. So sometimes that's what we see a player. I know I'm going to a bit drift here. When we see a player, he's a little bit ahead of his age group. We push him maybe more on the above age group. And this is sometimes when I think about, but there is a coaches could learn quicker than the other coaches. Why should I wait another 10 years just to become maybe level three? What did I do is I have decided took a different path. What I mean by a different path, I said, okay, I don't have anything to write on my CV, just apply and level one or level two. I don't have I have 6-7 months of coaching. So what do I have to do to attract Yasser or somebody else or the academy? So I decided to invest on any available CPDs that given to me, either by going 50 miles or just round the road. I spent around, for the first year, around 100 CPD.
Wow.
I go everywhere. If Yasser decided to do a CPD, I will go there. Because it wasn't expensive. I was able to afford it. And that time, I started applying for clubs. But I still doesn't have the coaching CV and the experience to allow me to be in the academy level. But then what did I decided to do? I start sending my CV. Then I managed to have a phone call from Histon Academy Manager, which is around the corner from me. And he said, can I meet you? And he said, I would like to offer you the job, but it's a volunteer one at that time. I said, yes, that's fine. And I start working with him. I start enjoying him because he's an experienced coach and manager. And after like 8 months, I start applying for Norwich City Development Centres. Norwich City Development Centre, I still remember, I applied 4 times and they never get me. And I remember I went to a coaching conference in St. George's Park and I met the guy who run the program. And he said, are you still looking for a job? I wasn't looking like for the money. I just wanted to coach under a professional level or actually under umbrella of a club. Mm-hmm. So I said, yes. Are you level two? Yes. Then I apply. I got interview. I got the job. So I moved from Histon after 7-8 months to Norwich City in their development center. This was a bit different experience for me because the tempo is different. People pay money, good money to educate their players. And so you have to really push yourself to the really good standard. What helped me also, there is a lot of coaches. So I used to be able to observe James, Alex, Ash, all these coaches, I used to observe it and see what they do, something different, so I could learn from them. Mm. That helped me slowly, slowly. So I stayed around a year and seven months.
So I guess, just on that then, you talked there about learning off other coaches. What, in that time, during the initial first stages of moving into that grassroots environment where you've had that Histon and obviously moving now into Norwich City's development centre, what were some of the biggest things you kind of picked up along that period of time?
I think the target for me, if I remember correctly, 2 to 3 targets. Number one is the practice design. I think that was very important for me. What do I have to do to improve the player? And the second thing is how I learned to build a good relationship with the player, and also how to improve the player. I think those three was the priority for me. And this is something is by doing it myself and again, learning from others.
Mm. Now you've kind of just on that then, you've talked there about moving from almost a grassroots setting, then looking at essentially almost like development. So almost, am I right? Correct me if I'm wrong, but almost like a pre-academy type setup.
Sorry, I missed that.
Is it like almost like a pre-academy type setup with Norwich?
Sort of, yes, yes.
Yeah. So you moved into that setting there now. Obviously, at that point, you're still a level two coach. Where does the B license come in? And just to kind of, again, paint that journey a little bit clearer, what year are we in? Still 2005, 2006 sort of thing?
2005, yes. Yeah. 2006, yes. During that, because I was so passionate, I was so driven to get into level three. At that time, level three was difficult, really difficult to get a place. And I start applying and applying whenever the door is open till I manage to get one of the last courses on the old format where they're when you go and they assess you.
Right. So what year was that in? Because then
2016. Yes.
You've had, that's quite a length of time between the two courses.
Yes.
So because you're right, 2016 was kind of when they were just phasing them out.
And yeah.
I actually did my UEFA B in 2015, which was one of the final courses, certainly in my county anyway. You're right, the demand for courses was obviously it's quite difficult to get on them. I think it's probably a little bit easier now, maybe, I don't know. But certainly it was very challenging to get on at that time. And obviously to actually get through the qualification was another challenge in its own because, I guess the pass rate wasn't that high.
On that year, I was doing another two, three courses. I was doing Youth Module 1, Youth Module 2, and also I've done psychology level 3 and 4.
Right. Okay. So you've been keeping yourself busy. So I guess, going through all these courses, you started the journey in 2005, level 1, done your level 2. I don't know. So you've obviously waited a bit of time to go and do the youth modules, but where's the end goal? What was the, I guess the, and you might still be working towards, but what was the target? Was it just to get qualified or?
I never do things just to get qualified.
Yeah. Well, I'm really asking this because the amount of people I've come across that have actually gone and done qualifications, but they wouldn't necessarily consider themselves career coaches. So the question I always have to them is, well, why have you gone and done the qualification? Why do you so badly want the UEFA B? Why do you so badly want the UEFA A if you've got no intention of working in the pro game? And that's not to say that the information that you're going to learn on those courses isn't going to be valuable and important, but I also don't believe you need to go on those courses to learn that information or to understand and develop that knowledge. So what was that for you?
Yes, I'm going to give you an example, which is, sounds funny, when I was 10 years old, and I wish I still have that draw in my hand now, I draw that I'm going to play for Iraqi national team one day, and I'm going to win the World Cup. And I draw that. So I draw my dreams. And the other dreams, didn't happen because of with the current, the situation happened in the old days. Then the other draw, when I came to England, I came straight away to Cambridge. Mm. I want to either study at Cambridge University or work for them. So as a person, I like to achieve. And I want to leave a legacy for my family and for the people. I want to be a good role model to others. And what did I do is, if I'm talking about my IT background, I applied about 15 times for Cambridge University. Never got it. But I got an interview. I get the interview. Don't take me wrong. I get most of an interview. I don't get the job or I don't get the course. But I never gave up. I kept knocking the door till I managed to get to work in the most prestigious institute in the world, not just in the UK, in the world. And I'm proud of that. So I achieved this sort of things. In football at that time, I wanted to show something to other people from a different background that we could achieve something. I didn't know at that time what do you mean like achieve something. But I think more I progressed, more I learned, more I connect with other people, I thought the dream become bigger and bigger and bigger. And like anybody else, maybe coaching Iraqi national team one day, or maybe become the first Asian manager in Premier League or Championship. Mm. And this is the question, why not?
No, and I can really resonate with that because, growing up, when I first got into football myself and coaching more specifically, that was one of my goals, become the first Asian coach in the Premier League. And, my journey's kind of taken me all over the place now. And, that whilst it probably remains an ambition of mine to work at the highest level, again, my journey has impacted my my ambitions and my goals in different ways. So I guess, you know, I'm just kind of interested to know now then, you've now gone and done that UEFA B 2016. What was that experience like? And how did you find that, I guess, alongside doing the youth modules? Because obviously when the youth modules first came in, there was almost one pathway for those, one pathway for I guess the core qualification, which is your level one, your level two, UEFA B and UEFA A, which is obviously your traditional sort of pathway. But the messages would often be argued and considered to be contradictory.
And this actually nearly failed me on my level two, because I was doing youth module two in parallel with level two.
Right.
So when I went to deliver the test to pass or fail, I did a warm up with the football, which is youth module two, stating this.
Yeah.
The tutor nearly failed me because he said, "I don't want to see this."
Yeah.
And I said to him, "But this is what they teach us here, and this is what they teach us here." So, in my experience as a coach and how I see it as a player, I prefer it with the football. Yeah. And he said, "You couldn't do that." Anyway, I passed. He passed me. Yeah. It was interesting. The UEFA B was challenging for me because it's something different. It's more 9v9, 11v11. It's how you structure the session, how you coach. And the things was the intense course that required you to stay focused mentally while you have to participate in the session physically. So it was a bit like balancing between mental and physical to grab all these information. It was a challenge, but I think I've overcome these challenging by time. And I think end of 2016, where I finished my B license.
Okay, brilliant. Congratulations. Because obviously at that time, the success rate wasn't that great. The pass rate wasn't that great. And obviously since then, obviously the course has been revamped, restructured, and it's now moved into a completely different way of delivery. I guess, you know, on that then, going through those experiences, having started your journey, you know, we're now 11 years in now to your journey at that point, moving into the UEFA B, finishing UEFA B, what would you say some of the key fundamentals were for your own coaching philosophy at that stage?
I didn't call it at that time. They did not having that much influence about the world of coaching philosophy. I think it's in the last 5, 6 years, 7 years, it's just about start roll out this world coaching philosophy to people. Not like now, not like what we're doing in the A-licensing, for example. But the start actually for me, start building a knowledge that helped me slowly to build something, let's call it, in my brain. So I don't have it written at that time, but it just built something. I want football to play this way, in my opinion. This is the way I wanted it to be like this. And I think it's the key things still carry on is keep learning. Never, the learning is never stopped for me.
Yeah.
Never. The momentum of keep learning, it never stopped, till this moment.
Yeah. I think, you know, you talked about that moment to keep learning. Obviously, now since completing it, you know, you touched on it there very briefly about the UEFA A, and you are a UEFA A licensed coach now, are you not?
No, I'm doing it.
Currently doing the qualification. Yeah. But if, correct me if I'm wrong, but you are a level four coach having completed the Advanced Youth Award.
I complete the Advanced Youth Award as a course, as a case study. I'm just waiting for the last visit because of the pandemic is stopped at the moment. Yeah.
So, the pandemic has kind of put a hold on everyone in every capacity. So yes. Having gone through the old format of the level one, level two UEFA B, and now moving over to the new format now of the UEFA A and the Advanced Youth Award as it is, What would you say are some of the things that you've benefited and one of the biggest differences for you? Because for me, I consider myself quite fortunate in the sense that I had, similar to you, I did my level one, did my level two, did my UEFA B kind of old style.
Yeah.
And then my, you know, the UEFA A license, I was on one of the first courses that kind of, I think it might have been the first course of the new kind of format. So there was a bit, there was a few teething problems, I guess, but there was also a lot of the stuff that was given to us before was still being given to us. And also we was also allowed to have a lot of autonomy and ownership around the way we wanted to work and how we deliver. And obviously accompanied that with my experiences on the Advanced Youth Board itself. So what was that journey like for you? How have you found that? And what would you say are some of the biggest, or if you like, pros and cons for you in that process?
I think the new format is more clearer. There's more details under each, call it topic, subject. Sometimes, you know, when I look at it, because of the more details we get into depth and more and more and more, do I think sometimes do this necessarily? Do I need to know this as a player? Do I need to know all the information as a player, for example? Do I need to pass it all? I don't know. But sometimes I remember a friend say, less is more. And I believe on that sometimes. Do we need to complicate football to the player to let them do what we want them to do?
Yeah.
But in terms of the course, I think the quality of the tutor is different. In my opinion, I think the new generation of tutor is more open, more.
Do you think that's the quality of the tutor, or because the pathway has dictated that it needs to be that way? So why I say that, because I feel like in my experience that maybe some of the tutors previously were probably more knowledgeable. I think what you see now, and it'll be interesting to get your thoughts on this, is the pathway has, the way it's been reshaped, there's a lot more emphasis on it being a holistic approach, which I think is fantastic. But I feel like what's happened in the process of that is it's almost, I guess, glossed over the fact that actually football is still a technical and tactical game.
Yeah.
And a lot of the coaches, in my opinion, that are going through the pathway now are not as knowledgeable in the technical and tactical elements of the game. So it's all great having fantastic knowledge in the physical corner, in the social corner, in the psychological corner. Amazing, brilliant. But none of that means anything.
If how to play the game is different. How to play the game is completely different. And this is sometimes, I don't see that much tactical, unless you got a really an experienced tutor that who could show you or challenge your thought, which is, as you said, the holistic approach that think outside the box, see what the other team does, see what they do, how they solve this problem, and what they do, the things in the pitch and during the games. How do they prepare it before they go to the game? Because I always say each team have a pattern of play and habit. They will not change them unless the personnel will change or the manager will change. So what we could, and this is something about engineering, the productivity is high. We know what they're going to do most of the time. But I think it's a bit, you mentioned about in parallel, that the quality of tutor is improved because of the program is improved also. And that the tutor has to improve to deliver that quality program.
Yeah, no, I get that, and I fully understand what you mean by it. And my only I guess concern with the pathway where it is now, and this is why, to be honest, for me personally, it hasn't really impacted on me personally, because I feel like I said, I'm quite fortunate to have it. I had some of that, that old style delivery, which I feel like I took a lot away from. But obviously been able to couple that with my experience and now the new way of delivering, where we're actually able to kind of be a bit more expressive about the way we want to work and why we want to work in those ways. And I guess really challenge ourselves and become more curious as to why we're working a particular way. So we know we have to come up with a rationale and justification for what we're doing, in order to, I guess, demonstrate our competencies, essentially. I feel where a lot of coaches previously probably was coming onto the courses to get some of that technical tactical knowledge and to get some of that understanding. I can sit here and be critical of the process. I think one thing that's definitely clear to see that we're going to get from the current pathway and the way it's set up is that we're going to help, hopefully, develop more specialist coaches across different areas of the game. So whether that, you know, and you know, that's not even, let's never mind the fact that we've got something like the advanced youth award, where it is a bit more age specific. I think just generally, you're going to become more specialist coaches because of the work you're going to do in the different areas, whether you're working on A license, B license, whatever it is, because the work that you do is going to be specific to the group that you're working with. So naturally, you're going to have to become more competent and, I guess, in depth with the work you're doing for those group of players, if that makes sense. But I think where it does leave a gap is that technical, tactical stuff. And I think the coaches that are maybe, I think there's a lot of coaching now, certainly from my experiences as a coach and obviously more recently as a tutor, there seems to be, in my opinion, a lack of appreciation for the technical and tactical side of things, certainly more so from the learners' perspectives. They don't maybe appreciate how important that part is, so maybe they don't place enough emphasis on it for me. I don't know, it's just an opinion, but it's just an observation for me.
I think what I noticed between the old format and the new format, that helped the learner also develop their other skills. So, for example, presentation skills, how to deal with technology. I mean, I've been talking to coaches all the time. Some of them, they don't have these presentation skills. They don't have these communication skills. So I think the new format brought up a lot of emphasis on, if you are a modern coach, you're not just a coach on the grass, you need to have other skills to feed up to the coaching process. And using analysis software, using presentation software. So that, you like that actually help, for example, if you want to pass an information to a player, you could, if you don't have a good presentation skills, you can't simplify the message to the player and make it easy for him to understand what's happening or what's going on or how you want him to improve. That's something, I think it's a big bonus if you have all these elements or these skills to feed up to your coaching journey.
I think you make a great point. Obviously, developing the external skills around the actual technical element is obviously a key part of that process. And I guess, you know, to kind of move things on a little bit, I'm curious to know, back on your own personal journey then, you know, one of the things you touched on at the top of the conversation was one of your roles that you do, I guess, at this moment in time is you chair on the inclusion board with, is it Cambridge FA?
Cambridge FA, yes.
Now, without going into the role itself, I'm more interested to know about your own experiences. Now, obviously, you are a coach of Asian descent, you know, underrepresented group within the football industry, more specifically within the coaching space. What has that been like for you? And what are some of the challenges that poses for you? Because, you know, I've got my own experiences. I've got my own journey that, I think about. But how have you found that? And, you know, have you found that there is a genuine intent or deliberate act of racism? You feel like, you know, that racism holds you back? And what are your thoughts on that?
No, I mean, when I joined to become part of inclusion, I just wanted to help, because I think it's knowing yourself, aware of yourself, aware who you are. I think this is important as a human being before even a coach. And if I revert back to who I am when I was in Baghdad and what I was doing when I was young, I thought I lost these things because of transition from different culture to another culture. There's a language barrier, there is a culture barrier, there is a finding a job, building a family. When I was in Baghdad, I used to have everything. My mom is a doctor. My dad was a work in the government. So I used to have a good life, but everything being taken from you. So you had to like building yourself again. So when I start doing the coaching journey and I start picking up things that I wasn't aware of at all, and without going into details, what is it? But I thought, okay, I want to go to this role to make an impact and change things. Mm. I didn't want to just tick the box. I didn't know what is it, but I want just the intention was to help because I like, that's me. I'm a people person. I love helping people whenever I can. So I thought, okay, they have advertised for the role. It was a volunteer role. I spoken with them. I sent the CV. I got myself as a member. And we had a meeting. So I shared at that meeting my thought. It wasn't easy to come with ideas because when I entered the first meeting with the 26 people, I was a bit surprised because I thought, I'm the only one different here. And then I had to adapt a bit of strategy that I could, okay, at the end of the day, these guys, I need them to help me and I'm here to help them to achieve the outcome.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Of helping other people. So it took time to be where we are now with Cambridge Chair FA, for example. But I think the greater project that we worked together as a Cambridgeshire FA, the staff, the board, the council member, is to implement a plan, which is end up within 2019 November to create the first ever project for people from underrepresented background in collaboration, a partnership with Cambridge Mosque. And we managed to get, I think, 11 or 12 candidates on the course, and they are all now level one. And the beauty about this, I was able, because of my connection and network, I tried to help these coaches finding club for them. So because I was able to do that, I was so happy. These guys, they don't have to give up quickly. Hang on, this is yours. And I think if I'm not wrong, I managed to help five coaches to settle in a club, in a grassroots teams.
No, I think that's fantastic, you know, in terms of like I said, building that platform for coaches from the underrepresented groups to kind of get involved in coaching more specifically. But, you know, I guess I'm really curious to know about what your journey's been like as a coach. And obviously you talked there about your role on the inclusion board, but what are some of the challenges that you faced in terms of getting into the environments that you've, you know, tried to get into and that you've been successful in now getting into? I mean, was it, you touched on earlier, sometimes you've had interviews, maybe not quite got the job. At any point in that process, did you feel like there was a fair process? Did you feel like, you know, there was a certain place or?
I'm not going to mention clubs. I'm not going to mention names of clubs. But I think the journey from start applying for academies wasn't an easy because you go there, you see things. You see, like, for example, you're the only one different. They don't try to understand your background as a coach, as a human being. Because might be you do something and you think I'm like you. So no, I'm not like you. I'm a completely different. I come from a different background. And if that's something allowed to, you know, you're allowed to do this. I'm not allowed to do this. It's against my beliefs and values. And it took a time because it's affected me a little bit. I'm not going to lie to you. It affected me because thought, what's going on here? Why? I'm not a bad guy. You know, I'm just a human being trying to be a coach. Even like, I'm not there for the money. I'm not applying for a role to get money. I already got a job. I got, but yes, there was a barrier. There was a blocker. But I think, and this is something interesting. I think soon I joined Peterborough, I thought I'm in a different world. I think Peterborough environment is made me relax as a coach. That was a nervous because I thought I was, I remember an incident before I joined Peterborough in a club without mentioning the name is I came to the training session and I'm wearing a short socks. it was a bit summer at that time. And I still remember the guy, he came and say, I'll fine you for wearing a short socks, £10, I'll take it from your wages. And I was looking at him, why? And what interesting. And I turn around, and there's about five coaches wearing shorter than my socks. So I thought, is that deliberate? And I went and see him after I finished my training session, because I was focused on my training session. And I said to him, it's fine if you want to take £10 from me, I don't mind, but can I ask you, can you see the other coaches? And he looked at them all and he said, from next week, everybody should wear long socks. And that little things, why? You know, why me? Is that because I'm different? Because he think I can't answer back or I can't challenge him? I think that's one of the small example that I picked up. Other example, I don't mind to share it, is I'm talking to you, guy, without mentioning colours, talking to you, and the conversation starts about football. As soon another gentleman comes in, same colour, same background, the conversation transferred to the other way side, and I've been not included. Is unconsciously happening? I don't think it's intentionally. It's unconscious, but these little things start affect me a little bit. But I thought, okay, I know who I am. I've got a target and I've got a goal and I want to achieve it. So focus on the steps to achieve that goal. And I think as soon as I joined Peterborough, I was a little bit nervous for a few months because I was learning about a new culture of a club, of coaches. But as soon as I noticed the culture was all about togetherness, that we could talk to each other, that we could share ideas, it's not about criticism, it's about, okay, how we could do things better. I think that relaxed me as a coach and I start enjoying my journey as a coach with them. And that's why I like the club. That's why I'm still in the club.
No, I think that's fantastic. I kind of just on the, you know, there's a few different things there that you talk about, potential challenges. What would you say is one of the, would you say that's probably been your biggest challenge in your coaching journey, is dealing with that potential discrimination because of your background?
It just become different. Because I'm different, it's the biggest challenge. Because what happened is, I don't have that the heritage difference, but I have also, I come from an engineering background that I see things differently. I'm not just a coach. I'm an engineer, and that's something they don't see it, because they don't see that I have a multiple skills that, like a normal coach, even they work in a Premier League club, for example, they don't have these skills. But I have these skills, could contribute to coaching and improve the logic thing, the systematic things, the creativity, think outside the box. They don't have these things, because what happened? Most of the educational program, not just in coaching, they actually try to help the people, to educate them most of the time as a copy. There is no thinking outside of it. You're not allowed to ask a question. You're not allowed to challenge. And I can't do that because I've got a different background. I can question things. I can challenge things. And that's one of them.
Then I'm just going to pause for 2 seconds.
Okay.
Right, Natty, you obviously talked there about some of your challenges, and I'm curious now, obviously, you've been coaching for a number of years now, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it coming up to maybe 16 years, is it?
No.
More than that.
7 years.
You started in 2005, no?
2015.
Oh, so apologies, I thought you said 2005.
I think 2015.
So 2005, 2006, you did your level one, no?
No, 2015, I got my level one January.
Right, okay. Okay, apologies. So I've got that wrong. Obviously, it's 2015. So you're 7 years into your coaching journey. Now, you know, to kind of progress at that rate, where you're now doing your A license and your advanced youth, well, that's quite a quick turnaround.
Yes.
Do you think that's held you back at times? Because I know certainly from my own experiences, you know, I've had kind of a similar journey. I started coaching in around 2010, I think it was. So I'm probably in my 11th year now. But I also had a period in between that after, you know, about 2.5 years, and I took about 2 years out of coaching. So I've probably only really been coaching for about 8 years. But, you know, I've finished my A license and my advanced youth award. I've got a bunch of different qualifications in terms of, I've got my goalkeeping B license as well. And I've had a few different experiences myself. And, you know, some of the challenges, obviously, in terms of that is people maybe can make an argument and say, well, you haven't necessarily got the depth of experience. Yes, you've got the qualification, but your experience, you might still be lacking. What are your thoughts on that? Do you feel like that's held you back at all in any way?
Yeah, it's a valid point, and I get sometimes same expression, 7 years in your coaching. Okay, that's not long, but I completely disagree. I think we mentioned on why we put a player who is a early developer, or he's exceptionally better than his age group in a different higher an older age group. Because we saw the potential that he could comes in, because he could learn quickly. He could, some of the player develop physically, mentally, that sometimes we push them to age group. So if we're talking about coaching, and now it's fine. Now I'm going to talk about education. When you do your degree, you study 4 years or maybe 3 years to get a bachelor degree. You apply for a master. The university is bigger than the coaching as a profession. The university offer you to do a master degree. Within 4 years, you got a master degree. And if you decided to go for a PhD, within 8 years, you could achieve a PhD degree. You will become a doctor in any profession you want. So, and actually, when you get, you might, in this journey of 8 years doing a PhD, you might not have maybe that much experience in teaching and even hands-on on the things you do as a doctor, for example, or as an engineer, but you still have some qualities allow you to achieve this. It's the same if we could replicate in coaching. Why should I wait 12 years or 15 years to be an A-license coach? No, that's a question, by the way.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think for me, I agree with you. I don't think you should have to wait. If you're ready, I mean, I've, you know, just kind of painted a picture. So I did my level one within the first 12 months of me coaching. I did my level one, I did my module one of the youth award, module two of the youth award, I did my level two outfield and level two goalkeeping qualification all inside the first 12 months. And then, you know, from me finishing my B license in 2016, there was probably only about a 6 month turnaround from finishing the B license to me now starting my A license, because what you've just said there is key. You know, on my action plan for my B license, it said from my tutor, well, go away and do 50 hours at this level and then think about applying for your A license.
Do you mind if I mention something? Which is interesting. What's that 50 hours will do to me?
Well, this is it. I think that's what I was about to go on to talk about, is that those 50 hours, if the tutor actually took the time to understand my context and my experience and what I was doing at that time, he would have realized that actually those 50 hours, based on what I was doing, would have only taken me 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I was working about 15 to 20 hours a week coaching at that point. I've been fortunate enough, I guess, since that kind of time has, that time came, I've always kind of been working in a coaching capacity. And like I said, within 3 weeks, I'd already done the 50 hours that he probably set aside for me to kind of do. So I was in a position to, one, get a job in an academy at that point. I managed to start in an academy before I completed my B license. And I'm, you know, thankful for that opportunity. And as time's gone on, I've now gone on and done my goalkeeping B license, done my my outfield A license, done the advanced youth award, and I'm currently doing my master's now for different reasons. But for me, I've always been one where, okay, I'm doing my level two, but I want to know what B license looks like.
Yeah.
Because I want to know what I'm working towards.
Curiosity about learning. Because
100%, because I knew where my end goal was and what I wanted to achieve. And I knew that these were some of the things I was going to have to do along the way. So it's good for me to kind of have an idea of where does that take me next. So I can do my level two. I can kind of work at this level, or I'll get my level two, think about what the B license looks like, and start preparing for that and start implementing some of that. So I would probably take time to maybe go and observe some B license courses, go and observe some A license stuff, and just so I can kind of build a picture of what that is and start trying to implement that stuff and work on that stuff before I go and do the qualification, if that makes sense.
One thing is, which is I get like when they say you need to do a year or 2 years of coaching, but actually
I don't get it.
I don't get it also, because I could do the 2 years of coaching, but I could do the same mistake every single session.
There's that part.
If I don't have a ground that somebody could come and help me, or maybe give me some feedback or critical analysis about my coaching, I wouldn't develop as a coach. I could replicate, I could do every single week the same mistake with the same players, and probably at the end of those 2 years of, okay, I've finished my 2 years off, can I do the B license, and it doesn't work like that for me. I think it's a combination of doing this, go on the grass, go and observe other coaches, read books, listen to people, other people, make sure you get somebody who's more experienced than you that could help you. And also is attend webinars, try to develop other skills that you need as a coach to implement new things. And I think this is important. All these I mentioned now, you're not going to write it into your coaching. You need, when you go into that pitch, to make a real impact for the beneficial of the, for the players. Hmm. That's for me. When I go to the pitch, I want to make sure I'm going to create a positive, creative, a learning environment for them. When I step in, I want to make sure I deliver that. That's the journey. That's, by the way, this journey, it will not be delivered in the courses only.
No,
even if you've gone, yeah.
And I think there's some key parts that you mentioned there. And I think what's coming back to the top of that question, you know, should there be a time frame in between? I don't think there should, because for me, it's about, do you understand what's needed at this stage? If you understand that, then you can surely start working on it to try and implement it. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be excellent at it. So, you know, when I finished my level two, which I almost failed, to be honest, because there was a bit of a technicality there. I think when I did my level two, it was, you had to work with, I think it was 4v4, but you could only coach one team.
Yeah.
And I think I had one particular situation where I had 4v4, but there was two kind of floaters on the, so whichever team was in possession, it was a 6v4. And in that moment, I happened to stop it with one, when one of the floaters had the ball. And I coached them, and the tutor was like, well, you can't do that. I was like, well, yeah, I can. They're on my team. And he goes, yeah, but it's a 4v4. They're just floaters. Yeah, but they're on my team at this point in time. So, you know, we had back and forth about that. And back then it was one tutor would deliver the course and another tutor would come and assess you. So the tutor who we delivered the course said, no, that's fine. But then obviously this guy had a different view. But so, but what straight away from the beginning, what kind of really helped me do was start to understand, okay, they want it done in a particular way. What does that way look like? So back then it was, okay, they wanted the level, you know, I did pass on that level 2, thankfully. And then straight away I was thinking, okay, so what do they want the level 3 to look like? What do they want the B license to look like? So for me, it was like, let me go and see it. Let me go and try and get on the course. Even if I don't feel like I'm quite ready, I'm just going to get on it and throw myself in it, immerse myself in it, and the rest will come. Now, again, thankfully, I passed that first time around as well. Success rate was ridiculous. I think I was speaking to someone earlier about this, and I said there's 48 people on the course. I think only 13 of us passed. It was crazy, and that was quite common. The success, the pass rate wasn't that great, and it then made me start to think, well, it's great that I've passed, but what does that say about the tutors on the course?
Yes.
What does that say about it? You've actually got 48 people on this course, but you've only passed 13 across all 4 groups of 12.
And I really get that point. Yeah.
Or is that a problem with the tutors? Surely it can't be all on the tutors, but it can't all be all on the learners as well. So the tutors have to take some responsibility and say, well, what have we done here that's not quite right, that haven't helped this group here get to at least a standard where they can just pass the qualification? And not they don't have to pass with flying colours, if you like, or pass with a tick in every single box, but how have that many people not passed this qualification? What does that say about the delivery of the course? So it then made me start to think, okay, well, I want to know, what does this process look like? What do they want to see? Why do they want to see it this way? And it started making me more curious. And like I said, for me, it was always right. Okay, I've got my level 2. Let me go and look at the B. I've got my B now. Let me go and look at what the A requires and just really start to kind of do it from that perspective. And I guess put myself in a position where I have to be pulled up towards what the standard is.
Yeah.
Rather than just gravitating around, okay, I'm a B license coach. Let me do this for 3 years. And then now I'm going to go do my A. So I've been quite fortunate in some ways because I've been around coaches that have really helped me along the way. And I've been able to pick up a lot of this stuff off because of they've gone through the course already, or they've had an understanding of this bit. And so I've had people to kind of reach out. So I guess from that perspective, I think, you know, but the one question I do always go back to for coaches is, why do you want that B license? Why do you want the A license? And this is coming back to the topic that we were just talking about a second ago, about the underrepresented groups and you know, they had the bursaries and things like that, which I don't think is the answer to solve some of the challenges the coaches like myself and you face, because all it's really doing is creating more coaches that are still not going to get through the door.
Yeah.
Now, I get the idea. You want to have more numbers and whatnot, but what happens is also with the bursary is it's viewed so negatively with a lot of people.
Yes, I agree with that.
Actually, it can actually be a disadvantage, but as much as you've got a bursary, you still have to get through the qualification. Miss the bit where a lot of people miss and look past. So I think for me, bursaries, I'm a bit, I understand. If someone offered you a bursary, go and take it. I understand why you would, but that's not the answer. And if you're relying on the bursary to help you get through this journey and to get you an opportunity in this journey, then maybe you don't want this journey bad enough, in my opinion. But away from the bursary, what do you think can be done for for people like yourself and like myself in that pathway?
I think there is, in recent years, I think there's a lot of things being done. I think at the moment, I think the inclusion and diversity placement in some of the Premier League, they start opening the doors, which is basically allowing coaches to come in and join the staff for 2 years.
I mean, have you applied for those?
I applied, yes.
Okay. Now,
I think one of, they invite us for a webinars to talk to us. I think the feedback was, I'm just a little bit far away from them, which is fair enough, you know, it's a fair point. But there is...
Are you talking about the ones that came out just before Christmas?
Yes.
So there was, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the 9 clubs participated in that.
Yes. I thought if I want to decide to move on, I might go to an experience just to gain more experience in a Premier League club.
That's quite interesting because you're actually in a club at the moment.
Yes.
You're being paid.
Yes.
To do that job.
Yes.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but that placement that you're talking about there, that is a voluntary placement.
Yes, yes.
Now, what does that say about the lack of opportunities? If you're willing to have to leave a job that you probably found quite challenging to get in the first place, to then go to an opportunity to work for free?
I think the idea is for me when I applied for it is for the placement, which is it's a free job basically. I think I just wanted to get involved more and to see what other clubs in a Premier League does. So do they do something different than maybe category one or category two or category three academy? Do the coaching's ways is different? How they structure the syllabus, how they maybe help the player to develop better? So I was interested in all this to have an experience on it. Still for me is because I've got my daily job, which is a good paid job. Wasn't for me the money is the main issue.
No, but surely that's a problem though, surely, because you're now saying to yourself, actually I've got a job in an academy over here and I'm doing all right, but
yeah, I am, yes,
position now to go and try and get a free opportunity elsewhere. Because the reality is and this is I guess what I'm really trying to figure out from your perspective is, if that opportunity and there isn't a scheme or an initiative there, do you get an opportunity to even apply?
If it's like if they advertise for a role, I think previously, not now, I think it's a bit changing a little bit now for a better, I have a no chance.
But the reality now, off the back of your thing, things are changing for the better. But what's changing? Because at no given point can the Premier League or the EPL or the EFL or whoever that is, no one can mandate these clubs to actually hire people that look like you and me.
I think there is a honest conversation going behind the doors. I think the FA with the diversity manager doing a great job in time trying to help coaches from underrepresentation background to integrate into different clubs. I think the initiative is started more, become effective, more become like real.
Yeah.
It's real.
You know what? I'm interested because one of my views with the, this is not directed towards any particular organization, whether the FA, the Premier League or whoever, but one of the things I've been quite skeptical about with initiatives like this is, once the coach has finished the time period or whatever it is that you want to call it, the contractual term or whatever, what are they doing now?
That's the question need to be asked.
So, surely that's an issue, because basically what you're saying is,
so that the new initiative, the placement is 1 year. And the new there's a new initiative which is about 2 years with paid like a paid role. I think the idea is we will get you in inside the doors, you will learn from us, we'll help you to develop, and if we think that you're good enough, we'll keep you.
Okay.
Obviously we can't say how are they going to monitor it? How are they going to control it? I have no idea. I know from experience in seeing different clubs in terms of transparency and in terms of getting people, the right people to the right positions, is in the past wasn't great, but now I think there is more investment into, for example, their HR system. There is transparency in that when you apply, they don't look at your picture. Oh no, he's not good enough.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but how about the rest? It will take time. And I know for a fact from experience in different environment, because I worked in different environment. I worked in three countries, and I worked in IT industry, and I worked in football. People doesn't like changes. Mm. People doesn't like to change things in they used to be. So if you are sitting in your comfortable chair for 10 years and somebody comes and says, oh, I've got this idea, I've got this idea, I've got, they will try to push you away from them.
I get that, because they people like being in comfortable positions. They don't like change. I get that element of it. I guess, you know, from that perspective, then, you know, what do you think? It's interesting because, you know, I've had this conversation with loads of people, and I think to myself, there's loads of coaches out there that are definitely good enough to be in the system.
Yeah.
But you definitely see programs like what you've just talked about, the that initiative. That free opportunity there, and you talked there. Did you have an interview for that? Did you?
For
that initiative that you talked about there.
No, but they said they just got feedback.
What was the feedback out of curiosity?
They said the distance only.
Just a distance.
Yes.
Now, you see that even that's that's a bit concerning as well. Because for me personally, I'm thinking, well, if someone's applied for it, they know the distance.
Yes, I know, but.
But, you know, that's a separate discussion. I guess I'm not the one recruiting. But what I would say on that, you know, is the fact that you feel like you have to wait for opportunities like that to actually get a genuine chance is an issue. So I guess from your perspective, what do you think should or could be done to kind of eradicate such challenges?
Difficult answer. It's really difficult, you know, to answer this. It just basically, I think number one is educating people.
Mm.
I think that's, in my opinion, educating people. These people who are from a different background, different color, different religion, different thinking. It's not enemy. It's just the people. They want to find their way. They have a love for the game and just want to progress like anybody else. I think that's the key. Education is a key. Number one. I think number two is implement an effective employment structure that help people to apply without fear. Oh, okay, I'm going to apply, but I know I'm not going to get it. I know no one will get back to me. And it will take time. I'm telling you now, it will take time. It's not going to fit. We're not going to solve this issue next year or 2 years or maybe 5 years. It will take time.
Mm.
And I still remember, and I'm you know, I still remember when, don't take me wrong, there is some good club. And I'm very proud to say I work for Peterborough United, because I don't feel they employ me because I am from underrepresentation background. No, they employ me because they thought I'm a good coach.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie. I went one day and I said, during a conversation with somebody who was involved in an interview process. And I said, did you employ me? Because I just want to make sure that I'm not employed because they have to.
But will anyone ever give you the honest answer to that question?
No, he did answer me honestly. He said, no, we employed you because we think you're a good coach. And I know for a fact, because I this is my second year with him, I know he will tell you the truth.
Mm.
He will not hide. You know, you could find out with somebody within a month or two, they start lying. No. I've been working with him for nearly 2 years now. Mm. And I could tell I could tell 100% he told me the truth. And I'm happy to hear that they did not employ me because I am from underrepresentation background.
And it's definitely a hot topic. And I think it's one that, like you said, it was not going to be solved overnight, and it's not going to be solved in the next maybe year or two. But I think there is some fantastic initiatives being put in place. And hopefully they're going to start to make a shift in the culture of the, I guess, the coaching world, more specifically shifting the attitudes and behaviors of those, I guess, are decision makers within it. I guess, you know, to kind of build on that, then, you know, as we start to look to kind of wind down now, what would you say, you know, if I took you back to maybe the start of your coaching journey? So we're looking back at 2015 now. Yes. When you first got into coaching and knowing what you know now about the industry and all the different experiences you have had, what is one message that you might want to give yourself then?
Keep going. Keep, you know, I think during this interview, we said I'm a guy who always driven to improve, always driven to go forward. And if I said to you this, you will probably not believe me. When I start my coaching journey, I still remember the old FA page about the Advanced Youth Award. I looked at that page. I said, within 5 years, I will doing the Advanced Youth Award or A license. Mm-hmm. And I am.
Well, just out of curiosity, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you might have even been on the same course. Did you start yours in 2016, was it?
2016, my B license, yeah.
And then you did the Advanced Youth Award in what year?
2018.
Okay, all right, fine. You might have, I think, done it the year after me then. But no, that what are your thoughts on that course?
I think it's a brilliant course.
Yeah?
I think it's a brilliant course. The way they structure it, the people they comes and deliver the topic, I think they're all brilliant. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a eye-opener. And also the good things is I made a good friend on that course and build the network. Mm. So whenever they see you, they say hello, they start talking to you, which is a great thing when you go and play them in their clubs, which is a really, really... it was a great experience.
Fantastic. And just again, as we start to kind of look towards wrapping things up now, you know, you've had those experiences, you're still, you know, quite experienced in a short space of time. You managed to get some, you know, some to a decent level in terms of your qualifications and a range of experiences working in academy football as well. What would you say now is next for you in your journey? Obviously, you know, you want to finish the A license, get the Advanced Youth Award wrapped up. But in terms of the next stage for yourself?
I think is obviously keep learning. That's a very important thing for me. Keep learning. Keep networking. I think, as I mentioned before, I'm a people person. I like people. So I like to network with people. I like to chat with people. I like make a friend, really. That's very important for me. And one thing is keep, you know, the things I learned, I would like to consolidate them so I could move to something up, which is maybe start thinking about coaching older age group, maybe start working in a first team environment. I'm not going to say I'm going to do the pro license yet. Not yet, but it's maybe another 5 years.
Okay. Well, at least you set a time on it now. So in 5 years' time, I expect to see you there.
I hope so. If I have the platform to allow me to keep learning, keep developing, and also consolidate well, and that I could be more confident in what I know, more have a call it an outline, clear philosophy, because it's still building your playing philosophy as a person, but I still need some layers to add to it, and it will take time.
Definitely. You know, kind of just on that then, you know, if I gave you 60 seconds now to kind of wrap up some golden nuggets for the listeners and viewers, what would that be?
Never give up. Don't believe in yourself. Keep learning. And what's the most important, stick to your value and believe as a human being. Do not change it to satisfy people. Mm. And that's very important for me as an Aether.
Brilliant. And I want to kind of take you back to something that, you know, a word that you used earlier, and it's one that I believe in a lot. And it's this idea of a legacy. you know, obviously just by having this conversation with me now, you've made yourself part of the Coaches Network. So what's the legacy that you'd want to leave behind and the message that you want to leave with people?
I want to be remembered as a good person who worked hard, worked honestly, and achieved something special. And the most important, my family be proud of me.
Excellent. And nothing, you know, obviously it's been a fascinating conversation for me this evening with you, and you know, it's touched on some interesting points and some big talking points specifically around the inclusion piece. And I'm sure we could probably go on for hours regarding all
this. I'm sure.
On that note, you know, if the listeners did have any questions or wanted to know a little bit more about your journey or some of the things that we've discussed or even beyond, is there some way they can get in touch with you to do that?
Yeah, they could get in touch with me through Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, or, you know, I'm happy to share my email address.
Sure. And what are your handles on Twitter and Instagram then?
You mean like my Twitter account is Natha_KHATIB.
Is it on both?
Yeah, just type my name and you should find me online. Google will do the job. Uncle Google, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, look, Natha, thank you again for your time this evening. Very much appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners have enjoyed it as much as I have. Wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And I hope that this conversation will land well to people and they could benefit from it. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.